tell me about your work in bringing these veteran intelligence professionals together.
Well, you're never really apart from watching what's going on with respect to foreign affairs in Washington once you spend so many years at it professionally. And when we intelligence professionals noticed that our profession, frankly, was being corrupted, that the intelligence itself was being adulterated, or as we say, cooked to justify an unjustifiable war, well, you know, it doesn't get any worse than that. And we felt this, an obligation, having been trained to analyze such things at taxpayers' expense, we felt a duty, really, to apply those same techniques rather to our own government than the Chinese or the Russian leadership. And we came up with shocking evidence that a war was about to start for no good reason other than the felt need to protect our oil supply from that part of the world, to create permanent military bases, and in the process to make that part of the world safer for the state of Israel. None of those objectives were the ones adduced by our president or others, but they were the real ones, and they are the real ones that are preventing them from acknowledging the inevitable and pulling our young men and women out of Iraq at this time.
I want to go back over those again and see if you could put them in the... Are you speaking of them in terms of the priority, protecting the oil first, establishing military bases second, protecting Israel third, or is that just as they occurred to you?
That's a good question, Ian. What I was trying to say here is that the weapons of mass destruction, this was not a mistake. This was a lie. The president knew this, so did the vice president, because Saddam Hussein's son-in-law told him that. Not only that, but my former colleagues at CIA had turned the Iraqi foreign minister working for Saddam Hussein, turned him into our own spy, and he reported almost a year before the war started that there were no weapons of mass destruction. So that was a canard, as was the attempt to connect what happened on 9/11 with Iraq. So what never gets discussed in the media are the real reasons. Then, you know, why did we do it? And the answer lies in our dire need for ensuring our supplies of oil. When Cheney and Bush came into office, for the first time in our nation's history, we started to import more oil than we were producing. Now we import about 65% of the oil, and as most people know, and this is the most important factoid in the 21st century, the world is running out of oil. And so you could look at the attack on Iraq and the war as the first resource war of the 21st century.
Mike German and Colleen Rowley, you concur on this?
I think that the Iraq, certainly it, I do concur that it was not for the stated reasons that that Saddam Hussein was behind the 9/11 attacks. I've actually done some research with the way that the Bush administration over a year's time got 74% of the American people to believe that Saddam had some connection to Al-Qaeda, which is just incredible. So the real reasons are a mixture, as Mr. McGovern is saying. It's there are many things, probably as well some political reasons in there. Certainly the global war on terror, which combines the domestic and the true actual need to disrupt true terrorism, that actually I think is also just for pure political reasons, because you have this war metaphor empowering the White House.
Mike, are you on the same page?
Well, you know, my focus was more domestically, and okay. Really my concern was more that understanding how terrorists operate and what they're trying to accomplish through their terrorism was that this was something that was going to assist the terrorists in their goal as opposed to prevent them. So that was really my focus.
I see that. But as to Ray's larger point about the intelligence books being cooked, does that also reflect?
That's very clear. Yeah, okay. I mean, I don't think there's any real.
No one's disputing that.
Now, I mean, whether.
And for the reasons of protecting the oil and for establishing a military base, you don't have anything in there that.
I don't have any knowledge.
Okay.
You know, I just, that's not.
That's fine. Ray, has that program hasn't been very successful, though, has it? I mean, if those are the three primary reasons, with the exception of Israel is still there, has this been working according to plan?
Not at all, Ian. And you mentioned Israel. You know, it's the height of irony that before we invaded Iraq, there were no terrorists there. And I say that again, there weren't any. There were a couple living in retirement, so to speak, but the only thing that Saddam Hussein was doing, and I don't condone this for a minute, was paying the families of suicide bombers in Palestine. Now, again, I don't condone that, but it was not as though he was running terrorist organizations, national or international. So now look at Iraq. It's teeming with terrorists, and Israel is at much greater peril. As a matter of fact, Israel is at more peril than at any time since 1948 when it was created. And that's all the doing of this misguided war. The law of unintended consequences has reigned supreme here. We're not going to be able to get more than our share of that oil. We're not going to have military bases there in a permanent way. And the state of Israel is not going to be protected any more than it was before the war. These people didn't know what they were doing, and they didn't listen to people who warned them about these things. You know, there's this hubris that attaches to the arrogance that comes of being the, quote, sole remaining superpower in the world, end quote. How many times have you heard that expression? These folks thought that they could pretty much do what they wanted. The Soviet Union was not going to interfere anymore. And so they could project their power in this very vital part of the world, establish permanent military bases, protect their interests in the oil, and in the process safeguard Israel. And they were wrong on all three counts. And the earlier that they own up to that and recognize it and get our people out of there, the better. Because, you know, this growth in terrorism, nobody really... I mean, what we're talking about mostly in the public discourse here are the symptoms and the Band-Aids we put on festering wounds. You don't confront the problem of terrorism without addressing the basic question, why do they hate us? Now, if you believe the president, they hate our democracy or they hate our freedoms, that's cockamamie stuff. They hate us because of our policies. First and foremost, our virtually complete identification with the state of Israel, with that right-wing government there that is oppressing the Palestinians, building settlements on Palestinian territory, and, of course, what we're doing in Iraq. And when you think, Ian, that there are 1.3 billion Muslims out there in the world, and that many of them have TVs, and what they watch every night is a steady diet of U.S.-built helicopter gunships, U.S.-built tanks, or even Caterpillar bulldozers wreaking havoc in the West Bank, well, and in Iraq, of course. Well, that's what instills terrorism. That's what makes the lines before al-Qaeda recruiting stations so long. So it's really incredible that our policymakers, you know, either have never been told that or refuse to admit it, because instead we're getting more surge and more of the same, and it reminds me very much of Vietnam at a comparable stage.